old-fashioned language, but a very lively and present sentiment. I want to tell you a story, a love story. The young lovers first noticed each other at the Park Street subway station, exchanging covert glances through the bustling crowd. Fate or luck often brought them down to catch the train at just the same time. And as anyone who has tried to meet someone at a party or a park or something will tell you, it's often very hard to make that first connection when we find ourselves attracted to a stranger. The only really honest pickup line is something like, "I notice how beautiful you are." And that's awkward. For some, it seems too shallow. And maybe that's what kept these two, these fine young professionals with their portfolios and their cell phones, from speaking for weeks, instead leaving them to enjoy merely the occasional furtive peek and that feeling of anticipation when they left work. Will they be at the station today? Someone had to be brave. Someone had to act, and it was Chris who did so first, in defiance of the rules, but with great concern for decorum. How would Brian respond? Did he feel similarly? Wasn't it usually a man asking a woman in these circumstances? But fortunately, Chris's instincts were right. Brian had also noticed, and very fortunately, Brian was also gay. Ah, the fate and the luck that brings two people together in love. A different job, a different train line, slightly different work hours, and Brian and Chris, two wonderful young men who were so right for each other, who fulfilled each other and challenged and grew each other, they would not have come together. And if they hadn't been lucky enough to live in a place where their homosexuality could be expressed naturally and openly, they may never have found that shared love at all. So it was an enormous delight to be able to retell that story at the most joyous wedding I have ever officiated. To marvel again at the good fortune that allows love to unfold between people. I have performed a ceremony of a same-sex union here in California. And I must tell you, as meaningful as that event can be, and surely as meaningful as it was for that couple, there really was something extra, something more real and more powerful in being able to say to Brian and Chris, with the power vested in me by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, I declare you legally married. It felt like a victory, not only for them, but for all people who believe first and foremost in love. Obviously, I'm here to argue for equal rights in marriage, for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people, but I want to approach it a little differently than is most common. Most of the arguments for same-sex marriage are rooted in civil rights and equal protection under the law, but I'm going to try to spend as little time talking about that as possible, partly because the resources for that line of thinking are so readily found. A little time on Google and the appropriate websites, and you will have more legal commentary than could fill a lifetime. I would particularly draw your attention, if you want to dig deeper, to the GLAAD website, glaad.org. Just fabulous stuff. And I don't want to skip it, because that perspective is inconsequential, hardly. This is a civil rights victory, and for that reason alone, I believe this struggle will be won. We will see marriage equality in California. Because America has still got it, ultimately. We grow up slowly, but we do grow up. Our history showing us overcoming slavery, expanding women's right, the vote, the baby steps toward addressing race inequality that we've taken speak to that. We do take our steps forward, and as such, we won't stand for this forever. If the Constitution survives its current attack from our national leadership, sooner or later, I am certain that equality for non-heterosexuals will become the law of the land. I should probably stop right there. With the good news and the hope of the promise of equality and rights that our Constitution guarantees, but I think we need to go a little deeper if we're going to make that happen. Whether we want to approach it this way or not, marriage equality is also fundamentally a religious issue, not merely a civil rights issue. Because for better, and certainly for worse, religion has always been concerned with sex and sexuality. And our wanting to make that piece of it, sex and sexuality, merely a civil rights issue isn't going to change that. Religion is the initial way as people came up out of the evolutionary past that they began to order their society and understand what was going on in pair bonding and the attraction between people and the fact that babies seemed to come out of that sometimes. And because religion has always been concerned with this odd tension we have between our mental peace, our spiritual peace, that part up here that can imagine perfection, that has emotion, that knows love, and the reality of this clunky old thing that only lasts 90 or 100 years if we're lucky. And so the body and the spirit, this is the purview of religion. And it is a religious matter because there's simply no question that the ultimate basis of those laws we hope to overturn, those various defensive marriage acts and other repressive laws, they are particular religious perspectives hiding under the guise of civil law, hiding under legal language that declares a certain family, a certain kind of family, as the core institution of society, and that puts forward a particular historically determined definition of marriage as the one and only way. I'm afraid history does not concur. And the fact is, the law of the land says that no one religious perspective can dominate here, but if we're going to whittle that away, we might want to be clear about what ours is. And it's complicated. That perspective that says that marriage is only between one man and one woman also has an abundance of other claims that are part and parcel with that, that most of us don't agree with, the relationship of men to women, that homosexuality is a deviant choice, not something that arises naturally out of human biology or human societies. It's an impermanent human view. It's rooted in the Bible, but it is only one and a very narrow interpretation of that scripture. Among other things, I must say, it ignores about 90% of the marriages in the Bible, most of which have well more than one wife going on. Indeed, there are only three statements in the whole thing that say a man should be married to one wife. They come at the very end. They're in the so-called pastoral letters of Paul that many don't think were even written by Paul. They're much later. They're written when the early Christian church that's getting romped on by various authorities and persecuted is trying to find its way in Greco-Roman society. And it's almost a kind of PR, you gather, that the leaders, the deacons and the bishops, it's said, must have one wife and then have all these other fine qualities. It doesn't actually say everybody should have one wife, but just, you know, the fella in charge. There's nothing said about lesbians in the entire Bible anywhere. And as Lynn Lavner, a Jewish lesbian comedian, notes, there are in fact only six admonishments in the Bible concerning homosexual activity, and our enemies are always throwing them up to us in a usually vicious way and very much out of context. She goes on to say what they don't want us to remember is that there are 362 admonishments in the Bible concerning heterosexual activity. She says, I don't mean to imply by this that God doesn't love straight people. Oh, only that they may require a great deal more supervision. And so this particular view, this scripture view, comes forward. It's just one way of understanding all of these pieces, and yet it's put forward as an absolute claim. First, that homosexuality is a choice. More than any other thing, I simply wish those people would get to know more gay folks and ask them about that. If you speak to people who have grown and changed on this issue, that is the one thing they will tell you. How did you change? Oh, well, I came to know somebody who was gay. And they might need to get realistic about the costs of being gay, a choice. Desmond Tutu noted once, we struggled against apartheid because we were being blamed and made to suffer for something we could do nothing about. It is the same with homosexuality. The orientation is a given, not a matter of choice, because it would be crazy for somebody to choose to be gay, given the homophobia that is present in society. Thank you, Desmond. And the claim, not only that one man, one woman is the biblical truth, which we can see that it's not entirely, but that that's the only way and the absolute foundation of society, I'm afraid it's patently false. The anthropological data is contrarywise. In fact, the American Anthropological Association said as much in a statement in 2004. I won't read the whole thing. They basically say the claim that either civilization or viable social orders depend upon marriage as an exclusively heterosexual institution is false. There is no support whatsoever. Rather, anthropological research supports the conclusion that a vast array of family types, including families built upon same-sex partnerships, can contribute to stable and humane societies. That seems obvious. I must say, it's baffling to me that people fear that same-sex marriage will weaken the state of heterosexual marriage to which they cling so tightly. First of all, it's not like heterosexual marriage is doing all that well of its own accord. Okay, it might want to take care of its own house first. Second, how could more love and commitment between people, how could more family bonding and family energy possibly weaken that institution? Furthermore, that view, ultimately, if you read all these legal cases, I was really astonished by this, and you actually get down to the final justifications, you read the decisions. In the end, a strange claim is made that marriage is essential in this one man, one woman way because its fundamental purpose is to encourage reproduction, to ensure the furtherance of the human race, as if a law would be needed to keep men and women having sex and making babies. Like if we took it off the books and expanded it, we'd all, you know, start playing tennis or something instead. I don't think it works that way. In the end, I think that limited religious perspective, and this is no fair, I'm setting up a straw man, I know it, but I feel ultimately it's rooted in fear. It's rooted in some kind of resistance to the rapid changes of the modern world, and perhaps rooted in this perennial human need to be in the in-group. And because homosexual people have always been a smaller portion of the population, well, you've got your ready out-group, essential to feel in. And we need to find ways to respect that fear and to honor it and to see where it's coming from and the very human impulses that produce it if we're going to engage in dialogue and make any headway. But we have to present a different vision, a more compelling vision that can overcome fear. And I think that religious perspective that justifies hatred, fear, and inequality, it can't be met with simple rights and equality talk. It has to be met on the level of the heart, on the level of the spirit. Yet, when I go to the UUA, our Unitarian Universalist Association, the denomination website, and read all of the statements, and there are many, we have a fine track record in this regard. When you read all of those arguments that are in support of the GLBT community, they're all those civil rights arguments. And I found myself saying, fine, but tell me why. Like, why? I want to know why I should believe in equality in this way. And the closest that it gets is in one statement, in our statement in 96 of the support of the right to marry for same-sex couples. It says, because Unitarian Universalists affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and because marriage is held in honor among the blessings of life. That's great, and that's, you know, true. But with that same language, our religiously conservative opponents might not necessarily disagree, actually. They would tell us they believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person. They just want them to stop choosing to be deviant. Okay? I'm serious. And of course they count marriage among the blessings of life. But, you know, ahead of or above inherent worth and dignity and marriage, they place the law, the tradition, the scripture. And that trumps those other things. And so we have to find something that we can speak about that trumps even those, that includes it and speaks beyond it, that can potentially speak to and guide more people. And because where I think we disagree with them and where I think that the point is that what we disagree about is the scope and power of love. That love is central to our being, not law or scripture, but love. Universal, powerful, and ultimately very, very personal. If Unitarian Universalists have a God, it is love. The most sacred thing to us, I believe, found in all the principles, the source of them all. And that word is peppered throughout the sources, the creative forces of life, the transforming power of love, loving our neighbors as ourselves. Emerson, as you see in that quote, even went so far as to say, it is our highest word, our sin, very synonym for God. And if that is the case, then standing on the side of love in this way is nothing less than that ultimate commitment and concern that must guide a religious people. It is the heart of the whole matter, love, what John Tarrant called the song the universe sings to itself. It's a beautiful phrase. And we hold that vision of love. We have for a long time a vision of love that is compelling us ever outward, that is of supreme importance in our lives, and that leaves no one out and is the doorway to our very best selves. That was held by our Universalist ancestors. They understood that visions of the sacred of community that let some in and keep others out are wrong. People can opt out. I mean, we've got this. People can destroy community and create division. People can and do live in fear and their hurt and insecurity and keep love away. That's a fact, but that's not love's fault. That's not the divine power's fault. That's our business to deal with. They held a vision of love that was complete, and amazingly, they found it in that same Bible. But they looked to verses like, I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of God who causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. One of my very favorite verses. This God who supposedly separates yea and nay gives every blessing to everybody all the time, no matter what. And whether you personalize that or not, or simply call it the rain or the crops, it's true. The earth will grow corn for the meanest person on the planet. That kind of love calls us to enormous risks, to transcend our boundaries, and not just in some spirit round. I don't want to be abstract about this. It's here in the real world that we're called to this, a real world that has always had, and will always have gay people in it. This is the world we live in. And so this is the UU path of holding love and the real world together, and trying to work that mix as much as possible for the common good, which means we have to put ourselves out there and take risks. As a religious people in this work, we have to do two things, and Andy spoke to some of that with the welcoming congregation process. First, we take a look at ourselves. We do that inner work. We ask ourselves hard questions. How am I prejudiced? What did I inherit? What purity codes and, you know, sensibilities were given to me consciously or unconsciously that I find myself bumping into when I want to reach out and love everybody? We have to be willing in doing that work to transform what we understand as normal. In fact, we might have to give up being normal altogether. And then we do outer work as well. We hang banners. We take votes, we march in the gay pride parade, we put ourselves out there and stand on the side of love. Is it worth it? Yes, because what we gain when we do that, it's what we want as people on this deep level right here. It's love. You can feel it. It doesn't take interpretation of scripture or knowledge of or belief in anything to get that. You feel it in the heart. I felt it on Friday night when we watched a movie here, The Pursuit of Equality, that was about that 40-odd days when Gavin Newsom was giving, had made it possible for legal same-sex marriages to happen in San Francisco. Incredible story. And though he spoke the language of civil rights, and that was all well and good, the part that had me and Bud Willis sitting over on the bench crying like babies was right here. It was just love in the heart when you looked at two people who had been together for 25 years and could finally say to the world, this is real. You couldn't help but be touched by that. Barbara Kingsolver said, if there's a fatal notion on this earth, it's that wider notions will be fatal. I'll say it again. If there's a fatal notion on this earth, it is that wider notions will be fatal. Ain't it the truth? And what we're calling for is a wider notion of marriage. And people will fear that, that it will be fatal to marriage or love or sex or whatever. But we're not going to sway from that. Because the final bit is marriage makes love. Marriage grows love. And if love is more of what we want, then we must support marriage for people. The work of two people engaging, growing, changing, coming together, going apart, learning, transcending themselves, compromising. That's the work of love. That's what it takes to grow in love and make it real in the world. And marriage serves that cause, so we must serve marriage. Because I must say, standing there with Brian and Chris on either side of me, looking into each other's eyes, saying their vows, I assure you, there is no difference between the love that gay people feel and the love that straight people feel. If anything, as Brian Wells joked to me at the 9 o'clock service, gay love is better because they have to fight for it. They can't take it. You can't just drift around and assume everybody knows that you've got something, that we all know what it is. You know, so there's something. Whether or not that might be the case, that thing between them, that's the one pure, true thing. And I've seen it between my minister, Jory Agate, and her partner of 17 years, Jeb, and the children they've raised. I saw it on the faces of good friends Susan and Marcia, members of the First Parish in Cambridge, who were the first to receive a marriage license in the state of Massachusetts at 12:01 a.m. on the day that it became legal, with hundreds of people waiting in line to get in. And I will never forget, I have a copy of it still, the look on their faces as they came out of City Hall, there on the front page of the Cambridge Chronicle with the wonderful headline, "The Sky Did Not Fall." In all people, the same sacred stream of love. And I'm sure it was on the faces of the plaintiffs, Hillary and Julie Goodrich, who made same-sex marriage legal in Massachusetts when our denominational president, William Sinkford, legally married them. I'm sure it was there. And I doubt when that wedding service was over that they went home and shook hands because they'd won a court case. I doubt that they high-fived each other because they'd advanced the so-called gay agenda. No, they probably went home and made love like any two other newlyweds would, in the manner described by this beautiful poem by Sharon Olds, with which I conclude. Topography. After we flew across the country, we got in bed, laid our bodies delicately together like maps laid face to face, east to west, my San Francisco against your New York, your Fire Island against my Sonoma. My New Orleans deep in your Texas, your Idaho bright on my Great Lakes. My Kansas burning against your Kansas burning against my Kansas. Your Eastern Standard Time pressing into my Pacific Time, my Mountain Time beating against your Central Time, your sun rising swiftly from the right, my sun rising swiftly from the left, your moon rising slowly from the left, my moon rising slowly from the right, until all four bodies of the sky burn above us, sealing us together, all our cities twin cities, all our states united, one nation, indivisible with liberty and justice for all.